It's time to break the silence and open up the dialogue around the topics of miscarriage and baby loss.
No more shame, no more taboo. Let's ditch it for the sake of our children.
The ones who are, the ones who will come.
And in memory of the ones who never came to be.
This is the Worst Girl Gang Ever podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Worst Girl Gang Ever. We are so lucky to be joined here in the studio by Lane. Hi Lane, thanks so much for coming.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Welcome. It's lovely to have you here. Now, I can't remember when we first started chatting to you about coming on the podcast. We're a bit of a nightmare about getting people on and getting it done quickly. We're just very busy at the moment, aren't we?
Lots of balls.
Very busy.
Juggling. I mean, actual balls.
Not bollocks.
No, well, bollocks. That as well. No bollocks, just bollocks.
So it's great to finally have you on and to be able to learn a bit more about your story. So do you want to start from the beginning and tell us how you became a member of the most glorious shitty gang there is?
Well, thank you for having me. I suppose to explain what happened. So I had my experience, my loss at the end of 2021. But to sort of explain how that happened, I probably need to go back. So I had my son in 2018, and I had he was born by an emergency cesarean. And so then when he was about 18 months old, I came off the pill and sort of decided that we would see if we could try again, or at least not prevent anything and just see what happened. I had a bit of a rough time having my son, so... I didn't feel strong enough to say, right, we're definitely trying and go fully into it. But I also wanted another baby. So we thought, okay, well, I'll come off the pill and we'll see what happens. And then I became pregnant at the end of that year. So late 21, like November. Found out I was pregnant and was really pleased. Quite nervous about having to go through pregnancy again and, you know, possibly have another cesarean, but didn't really think anything of it, and certainly didn't expect anything to go wrong. I think I was quite naive in that aspect. Having had my first child, didn't actually think that, you know, there'd be any problems or anything, which makes me feel a bit silly now, but there you go. I think I must have been about 6 or 7 weeks pregnant, and then I was at work and I was just sort of finishing up to come home because I had to do nursery pickup, and noticed that I was bleeding a little bit. You know, as I'm sure, you know, most pregnant women do, you know, when you go to the toilet, you always check. There was a bit of blood. So I was, you know, a bit confused because I hadn't experienced that in my first pregnancy. So, yes, that was the start of how I realised that something wasn't right.
And what did you do? When you saw the blood, what were your first, you know, what went through your mind, and then what were your actions that you took?
I think I was just a bit confused because, you know, I'd heard before, you know, you might get a bit of bleed, and I'd, you know, heard other people's stories and stuff. So I didn't think at that moment that something was definitely wrong, but it definitely felt like a bit strange because that wasn't my experience for my first pregnancy, and I had something to compare it to. So it seemed really strange. So I left work and made my way home, and I called the doctor's surgery because I wanted to get a bit of advice. I wasn't sure, and spoke to a receptionist who I think meant very well, but unfortunately was probably slightly unhelpful. She sort of asked me, you know, how much is there? What colour is the blood? And I answered her, and then she said, you know, it's not fresh blood, so you're fine. Don't worry about it. And I came off the phone and picked up my son and went home for the evening and tried not to think any more about it. And then the next day, it's a bit worse.
Oh, wow. No, she didn't suggest anything else.
No, I mean, I'm sure she meant well. And, you know, I'd even read online, if it's brown blood, it's, you know, it's not fresh, it's probably fine. So, you know, don't blame her for that. But,
did you get any advice about what happened if it got worse or...?
I don't think so. I can't remember. I don't think so. I think she just said, you know, unless it's red blood, unless it's fresh, then you're, you know, it's fine. That's normal. And then I just felt a bit sick, really, and came off the phone.
It's so difficult, isn't it? Because we can basically find whatever we want to find on Google. And I think there's such a strong sense of you just want to find something that's going to make you feel better, don't you? And it, I know from my experience, I would search, even after I found out that our baby had died, I would search like ridiculous things, trying to find the story of someone who they got it wrong, you know, all that sort of stuff. Because it's sort of inbuilt. I don't know what it may, I don't know what it is, but it's like a complete obsession with trying to make it better yourself, I think. But trying to find that story, trying to find that miracle. Yeah, definitely. So what happened after that? Take us through what happened next.
So the next day, so I was actually off the next day, and it was starting to get a bit worse. And I said to my husband, like, I'm a bit worried about this, but I'm not really sure what to do, because if I'm not supposed to be speaking to the doctor, then I don't really know what I do now. And then that evening, so it was obviously we were coming up. So now we must have been sort of late November, early December. So it was Christmas time. And we were taking my son to see some of the Christmas lights around the area. And on the walk down there, I'd sort of called the receptionist again and said, I really need to speak to a doctor. And they said, okay, they'll call you back. And then he called me back while I was like standing around other families, like looking at these Christmas lights. So it was like really, it's really odd, surreal situation. So I sort of walked away a little bit, and sort of, you know, talked it through with him. And he obviously asked all the questions and everything he needed to know. And at that time, I didn't know anything about cesarean scar ectopics and didn't know that was even a thing. But I remember saying to him, oh, you know, just for my history, I've had a cesarean, you know, a couple of years ago. Could that be affecting anything? You know, is this normal after a cesarean? And obviously, you know, it's not the first thing that jumped to your mind. So he said, no, that's fine. But thank you for, you know, letting me know. So I said, okay. And then he said, right, we'll refer you to the early pregnancy unit. So this was on the Thursday now. So he said, okay, you'll get a call asking you to come in. So I said, okay, come off the phone and sort of carried on again. And then on the Friday, didn't get any phone calls. So we went off to see Santa Claus and have that visit with my son. And then on the Saturday morning, I was really starting to get quite panicky. So I called the EPU up and said, you know, have you had the referral? When would I be coming in? So they said, okay, come in on Monday. So all that weekend, it was starting to get worse, and I was starting to get like sort of, you know, clots and stuff. Sorry, a bit TMI, but starting to, you know, get worse.
Never TMI.
I know. It's the same as TMI on the WPG.
So we went down to see some family on the Sunday, and at this point it started to get like a lot worse, and it was fresh blood. So I thought at that point, I thought, okay, I know what's happening. This is a miscarriage. That must be what's happening now. So we sort of packed up, went home and waited for that next morning. And then, you know, went down to the hospital in the morning, for them to scan me. And I think it must have been sort of right at the end of all the COVID restrictions. So my husband wasn't allowed in right until they did the scan. So he had to wait on the other side of a door while I went and sat in the waiting room, and then sort of got called in, went through my history, and then he was allowed to come in. I suppose the COVID aspect has made that all that experience, you know, harder for everyone. But, you know, having to sit there on your own while you're waiting to go in is awful.
That was in 2021.
Yeah, this was right at the end.
So was that when Christmas was cancelled? Was that year?
It was the following year. Yeah, so by this point, you were allowed to go out and about. You were allowed to meet people. But in the hospital, he still wasn't allowed in until the scan. And actually, when I had my surgery, he couldn't come in at all. So I was completely on my own then. But, I mean, at least he could come in for the scan, I guess. So they called him in. And then she was doing the scan. She was very nice, very lovely to me. But she sort of said, I'm going to show you on the screen. This is where your pregnancy should be, sort of in the, I don't know, I have no understanding of the medical terms. So I'm sort of just explaining how I remember it, but in sort of what I suppose the cavity of where it should be. And here's your scar, and here's where the pregnancy is. And she said, you know, it's extremely rare, but it could mean that it's attached or too close to your scar tissue. And at that point, she hadn't told me if there was a heartbeat. So I just said, is there a heartbeat? You know, is the baby alive? And she said yes. And I thought, oh, so what does this mean? Like, I at that point hadn't realised it was, you know, class and ect topic, didn't really understand what she was saying to me. Mm. And then I just got really, really upset and like burst into tears. And she asked me what was wrong. And I just said, I'm really scared because I don't understand what's happening. I just didn't understand what was happening. She was lovely. And obviously my husband was there. So that was, you know, really helpful. And then she said, in terms of like the measurements that the baby was measuring behind, and, you know, could my dates be wrong? And I said, no, absolutely not. Now I know it's quite rare, but my cycle's bang on. So like, I know exactly what my dates are. And she said, well, in that case, it's possible that the baby's just not got enough, or pregnancy has not got enough space to grow, because it's either attached in near your scar tissue. So it's just not able to grow properly. And then we got taken into what people call it, but I called it the sad room. Because we were sitting, obviously, waiting to see what was going to happen. And, you know, nice room. We've got lots of leaflets and things. So we were just sitting in there waiting.
Yeah.
And then she sort of come in and said, okay, you're going to have to come back later this week to see the consultant. We're going to have you back on Friday. But in the meantime, obviously, if you get any pain or anything like that, then, you know, you'll need to come into A&E. So just sort of went home. And this was on the Monday. And the consultant appointment was going to be on the Friday, so just had to sit and then wait with my thoughts and lots of Googling, which I probably wasn't a good idea because there wasn't really much about this online.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did you find when you Googled? Because there really isn't a lot, is there?
No, there's not. There's a lot of all I did really find at that point, because I still didn't really know that it was classic. But yeah, I did Mums Net Mums, all of those, and did find a few people talking about their experiences. But I also found some medical studies from America, which I think was the worst thing I could have read, because they were sort of talking.
I was going to say, was that helpful at all or not?
I think my husband said I shouldn't have looked at any of it, but I am the sort of person that wants to know every tiny little detail, because that's what's going to help me cope. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. It might be that, but I needed to know as much as possible, so I guess it helped a little bit.
Yeah, with regards to knowing all the detail, I think I'm someone who has to know all the detail, even if I know it's going to hurt me or make me feel like shit. I have to know it so I know exactly what I'm dealing with, because it's only when you know everything you can start to sort of work out where you are in your head with it. That's my personal opinion.
No, completely.
Elaine, I wanted to ask you about your symptoms. So we're always told to look out for symptoms of ectopic pregnancies, so pain and bleeding and the shoulder tip pain. What did you have? Was it just the bleeding that you experienced?
So I didn't have the shoulder tip pain. I didn't have really any pain at all, which was what I knew about ectopic. So it would never have crossed my mind that that was what it was. Looking back, one symptom I did have, which I think is linked to ectopic pregnancies, although this is me going back to all my research at the time, so I won't stand behind any of what I'm saying, but is that I was having sort of like stomach issues, like with extreme bloating to the point where I felt like I was way further gone than I was. And like problems like with the toilet and stuff, like really constipated and stuff. And that and the bleeding was literally all that I had. But at the time, I remember thinking it didn't feel like my last pregnancy, but you always hear, you know, every pregnancy is different. So I didn't think for one second that meant there was any problem. So if I hadn't have started bleeding, I don't think I would have even done anything about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've had two ectopics, and one of them, all I had was bleeding, no pain. And the other one, nothing, like they just found it on a scan.
Right.
So I just think it's really important that people are aware that, you know, to seek help and to get checked out, because, you know, we all think, oh, if we haven't got shoulder tip pain, then it's probably okay. But actually, not necessarily. And it's, you know, life threatening. So yeah,
exactly. I completely agree.
Yeah. So what happened in that 4 days where you were waiting to see the consultant? That must have been torture.
Yeah, it was, I think, I just wish I'd asked a lot more questions at the first appointment, because I still didn't really know exactly what it was or what it meant. I didn't know if there would be options or if it was like a one-way street to, you know, the end of the pregnancy. And because I knew there was a heartbeat, all I kept thinking was, am I going to have to make a decision on this? I don't want to make that decision. Mm. And I was just so, I think, to be honest, at that point, I hadn't registered that I was going to lose the pregnancy. All I kept thinking was, is I'm so frightened, because I didn't want to have surgery. I'd never been put out. I'd never been hospitalized, really, apart from having my son. So I was just selfishly, all I could think about was myself, and I was just really scared. And just spent a lot of, so I was off work sick. So I just sat there crying all day, basically. And not really, I think the hormones probably were messing around with me as well, but I just didn't really, know what was going to happen. So it's quite scary.
Did anyone ask you or tell you, like, I know that you said there were the leaflets and stuff, and they're usually, in our experience and from what we've heard from other people, it's like a piece of white paper folded with some writing on it. But did you have any information from the hospital that you could read and process, or were you literally just left with nothing?
I don't remember having anything. I remember having absolutely no clue. I don't know if that was because they weren't even completely sure themselves. I mean, she said to me that she'd only seen, I think she said she'd only seen one case like that before in her time. And so there was just nothing, I suppose there was nothing that would have applied that would have been able to give me any sense.
So, the warriorship, we wanted to come and tell you a little bit about it, didn't we, Bex?
And in case you're already going, why? We don't want to know about a fucking ship. The warriorship is our online membership for warriors in this community.
It's packed full of stuff. So we just want to tell you about some of the stuff. All of the content from all of the courses that we ever run is in the warriorship. So there's loads to get your teeth into.
And we are also developing modules for what happens after.
But not only that, we've also got a ton of educational workshops running once a month. In the coming months, we have got body positivity workshop, gratitude workshop, and loads more.
And on top of that, we also have a resident mental health specialist. And on top of that, as if that wasn't enough, there's 13 events every month. And there's stuff popping up all the time as well that other people are organising that you can be a part of. So it really is thriving.
And all you have to do is head to the link in our bio or visit our website, and you can be a part of this too.
We'd love to see you there. And then, so did your husband take time off work for those 4 days as well? Did you kind of spend some time together, or were you literally just sat at home by yourself?
I think so. He was working, but he could work from home and stuff like that. So he was around quite a bit. So even if he was working and I was sort of watching telly or in bed, I knew that he was there. I remember one evening he was due to go out because we were right on top of Christmas. So it was like his Christmas party or whatever. And I, of course, had done that thing right up until the last minute of saying, no, it's absolutely fine. You can definitely go and you know, you should do that. That's fine. And then when it like came to it, I was like, no, you can't leave me. I can't stop crying. You can't leave me. So he just cancelled all of his plans and stayed at home. It was really helpful having him around.
And how did you find trying to be a mum in that sort of space, in that window of time? Because that, it's an incredible pressure, isn't it? When you've lost a baby and you have living children as well to be a mum to, it's difficult to show up and know how to handle it.
Yeah, I think one of the mistakes I made as soon as I found out I was pregnant, and this comes back to me being quite naive, really. I said to my son, there's a baby in mummy's tummy. So he would point to my tummy and go, and so one of the evenings during that week, he pointed to my tummy and was like, oh, you know, baby. And I just sort of, I didn't say anything. And I thought, if we don't keep talking about it, he's going to forget. And luckily he did, because he was still quite young. Mm. It was really hard because it helped me keep strong when he was around, because obviously I had to look after him and just had to do what I needed to do day to day. But I also felt, because I had him, I felt selfish for being upset because I had him, and other people aren't that lucky. So, you know, I felt bad for even feeling as bad as I did. But I also felt really aware, therefore, of what I was losing, because I'd had a pregnancy and I had my son. I was also then really aware of that. And it, I think it was just so many different emotions all at once.
And so what happened on the Friday when you went in to see the consultant? Because normally the management of an ectopic is the surgical management is to remove the tubes. But I guess if it's in the cesarean scar, obviously they can't remove a tube because that wouldn't help. So what options were you given and what did the consultant say?
So when I was looking online, I'd seen anything from using the medicine, is it methotrexate or something?
Methotrexate.
Yeah, so I'd seen that, that was one way of treating it. I'd seen surgery was a way of treating it. And I've seen that in some cases, some people, as part of these studies I'd read, refused treatment and then carried on through the pregnancy. And then there was various stats on what had happened in those pregnancies after that. So I went into the...
Wow.
Yeah.
What were those stats?
I can't remember the exact details, but I think it was something like a certain amount of women lost the pregnancy. The pregnancy ended naturally. Some of the pregnancies continued but delivered very early and had to have an emergency cesarean. And I'd even seen things, and obviously this is worst case scenarios when you're on Google, and I'm aware of that, but like I was even seeing things that, you know, women at the end needing hysterectomies or it being life-threatening because the risk of rupture of your scar tissue. So I had absolutely no idea what was going to happen when I went into that appointment. So we turned up on the Friday morning, and unfortunately the consultant was really busy because they were fitting me in. So they said, you know, you're going to need to go away and come back later on today. And so I remember saying to my husband, I'm not going home. I'm not going home until I know what's happening. So we went to a shopping centre and just walked around the shops, went into Costa's and had coffee and stuff like that, because I said, I can't go home now until I'm not leaving until I've got an answer. I just couldn't handle it anymore. Yeah. But then they called me back, so because I was starting to panic that they wouldn't fit me in. But they called me back and he scanned me again. And he said, it's confirmed. It's cesarean scar ectopic. And he didn't really give me any choices. He just said, we're booking you in for surgery on Monday. And I think they called it surgical management, but I think it's what used to be called a D&C, perhaps. I'm not sure. So he said that will be on the Monday, and that's what we're going to do. And, you know, come back in. I think I had to have some blood tests, come back in on Monday morning, pack an overnight bag because you might have to stay. And yeah, we'll see you then. And then said, you know, if in the meantime you get any pain or the bleeding gets more severe, you just need to come straight to A&E. So I spent all weekend panicking that, you know, I was on the brink of it rupturing or whatever. And then went back in on the Monday for the surgery.
Wow. And how did you cope that weekend?
I think I was just really frightened. I'd never been put to sleep before. I'd never been through, well, apart from the cesarean, I'd never been through surgery. I just was, again, quite selfishly very frightened and not really thinking about anything else at that point. But I also, because, again, there was still, at that point on the Friday, there was still a heartbeat. So in my mind, I was going in for termination on the Monday. And that really messed with me, with my head, because all I kept thinking was, is should I have pushed to ask if there was a choice here? Is there a choice? But realistically, there was never any choice. Obviously, I had to protect, you know, myself. But it just, I think that made it so much harder for me, knowing that I was having to make that decision.
Yeah. I mean, you know, do you remember when all of the Roe v. Wade stuff came out in America?
Yes.
And people were talking about ectopics and using that as an example. But I mean, you wouldn't have been able to have that procedure.
Exactly that. When that news came out, I was devastated when I heard that news, for that very reason, because I thought if that had been me, I could have died.
Because I guess usually when people have a surgical management of miscarriage, it's because there is no heartbeat, right? And it's not viable for that reason, but your one wasn't viable for a different reason. So I can imagine that must be really awful going into that surgery. And I know, I'm sure many people who've had surgical managements before, I remember going into one of mine and thinking, can you just check? Can you just do one last scan and just check that it's definitely not grown? Mm. It's not developed a heartbeat, and just trying to sort of bargain with, I don't know who, but, you know, just trying to sort of find some sort of reason, yeah, I guess. But when you're going in knowing that there is a heartbeat, that's fucking horrendous.
Yeah, it was awful.
Did they talk to you about what was going to happen afterwards, and what, you know, the products, the baby, but, you know, they call the products, what would be done with that, or what they would expect to see?
They didn't tell me. I do wish now that I'd ask a lot more questions. I think I was so frightened that I just went with the process. And I'm not even, the impression I have of it now is I'm not even sure that they knew what was going to happen in that themselves, because when they were taking me down, they said to me, you know, there could be a lot of blood loss. We're not sure, you know, if that's not successful, we might have to, and I can't remember what words he used, but in my mind, it was him saying we might have to open you up, and we'd have to put a tube down your throat. So if you wake up and you've got a sore throat, it's because you've had a tube down your throat, and so on. So even as I was going down, I didn't really know exactly what was going to happen, and they certainly never mentioned. And that's one thing I wondered, having listened to your podcast since then, is why we never had that conversation. But I suppose there was, they weren't going to test anything or anything like that, and I never said, well, what are you going to do with it or anything like that, or have I got any options here? We never even discussed it.
Yeah, I think you don't know to ask those questions, or don't know that you're entitled to ask those questions, and until you hear these sorts of discussions, right? I never asked about any of mine apart from the two that were sent off for testing. And I remember waking up going, have you got the stuff for testing? Remember, don't throw it away. You've got to get it tested. But yeah, I haven't got a clue whatever happened to anything else.
Yeah.
And I'm a health professional. I was too scared to ask. It's crazy. But by talking about this, other people will hear it, and hopefully it gives them the courage to ask in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, Elaine, I was going to ask, I know that, understandably, you were so worried about what it meant for you and, you know, having an ectopic pregnancy and going into surgery and that sort of stuff. Usually when we have surgery, we know it's going to happen. Like if you have a broken bone, for example, you know you have a date, and you, even with a C-section, you usually have a date, unless it's an emergency, you have a date and you know what's going to happen, you know the procedure. But with this, I always feel like with ectopic, you're sort of sailing along through pregnancy, and you have that excitement, the hormones and all that, and then suddenly you're faced with this really, really frightening experience. You probably don't get the opportunity to grieve for the loss of the baby because you're so busy thinking about what's going to happen to you and the surgery and the procedure. So yeah. Was there a point where the fact that you'd lost your baby sort of hit you? And if so, when was that?
I think it was after the surgery, but I don't think it fully hit me until a lot later, until sort of even when I was coming up for when the due date would have been, and then when it hit the sort of 1 year mark of when it would have happened. I think at first I was so sort of numb to what happened. And I mean, when I got home from the surgery, because I got home that day, I was really lucky that it went so well. But when I got home, I had the sort of letter for the scan sat there waiting for me when I got home. And next day I had to call them up and say, you need to cancel the scan. I don't need that. And I think because I was on top of Christmas and we were, you know, trying to keep everything normal for my son, none of it really registered at that point. And then I went back to work, and it took quite a while for me to register what happened.
And how are you now? How has it affected you with wanting to try again?
Really mixed feelings. So after it happened, I decided, you know, I said, you know, I'm never doing that again. I could never put myself through that again. I'm not doing that. And then it got to the due date, and one of my friends had a baby right around the time I was due, and I found that really hard. And then I sort of seemed to recover again, and then I got to the 1 year point, that Christmas point, and I completely fell to pieces. And at the time I couldn't work out why, because it wasn't the due date, it wasn't, you know, there was nothing about that time And then I was reading your book after, and I, there was a bit in there quite near the start where you sort of talk about that, you know, that moment of when you reach that 1 year and how hard that can be. And that actually made me feel so much better because I honestly thought I was losing my mind. But at that point, I decided the only way that I was going to get over it was to have another baby. And that was going to fix everything, and that I would suddenly feel okay again if I was to get pregnant. And my husband sort of sat me down and said, I don't think that's a good way of coping with it. And I'd booked this big holiday to sort of help sort of distract me and everything else. So he sort of said, you know, let's just wait. Let's have the big holiday. Let's let everything calm down. And then when you're in a better place, we can talk about it again. So I think now I'm in a really good place at the moment. I'm feeling a lot stronger. I'm feeling, you know, that's why I wanted to do this, because, you know, I really want other people to be aware of that type of loss and understand what's, you know, what's happening to them if they're going through that as well. So I feel like I'm in a really good place at the moment. But it's feels like it's unfinished business, because on one hand, I don't necessarily know if I'll go through it all again or put myself through that risk. But I also can't close that chapter. And it feels like it's either way, I need to make a decision either way, because for me, I can't quite carry on until we either try again or I close the door. So yeah, it feels like I'm slightly in limbo at the moment.
I reckon there are an awful lot of people that can relate to that feeling. Definitely. And when you say that that's not a good way of coping, your husband said that's not a good way of coping. I mean, he's probably right, but I would guarantee that at least 80% of people who listen to this podcast will have thought the same. You know, just need to have another one. That's how I'll get over this. That's how it will make me feel better. So it's very, very common, if maybe not the best coping strategy. Very common.
So Elaine, you've got that holiday coming up, haven't you? Your the holiday that was your therapy. And we were talking about it just for the recording. Like, there's something really, really, I find, therapeutic about plunging your time into planning something.
Yes.
And like every last detail. And that's a therapy in itself, isn't it? I suppose it's a distraction. It's something to completely immerse yourself in.
Completely. I've become so obsessed with this holiday. It's all, I think it's, and again, this, I'm not saying this is a, you know, not a healthy way of coping with anything, but it's just become a distraction for me. And yeah, once that's over, then I probably will have to have another think about where I am. But for now,
well, where are you going then? Where is this wonderful holiday? Make everyone jealous.
I'm going to Florida.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Beautiful. In the summer.
Yeah, we're going this summer. So, well, late May. So, yeah, springtime into summer. But, yeah, I'm excited.
But you, during your struggles, Laura, you planned a wedding, didn't you?
Wedding. And that was a distraction. Yeah, it's true.
Was it helpful? Did it distract you?
It did distract me. Yeah, we always said that we'd get married, but we decided that having a baby was the priority. And when it turned out that wasn't our decision when we had a baby, we literally just shook hands and said, fuck it, let's get married. And he proposed 10 days before the wedding. But we started planning the wedding 9 months before. But yeah, it did help. It was a distraction. And I think, do you know, like it's a real distraction, even down to being sat on the sofa watching telly, scrolling through your phone. Yeah. Instead of scrolling and being triggered by other stuff or Googling things that you shouldn't be Googling, you can just look for, you know, table centerpieces. That can be your evening, looking at shit like that. Just anything to distract you.
Yeah. Pinterest is like your new best mate.
Exactly.
Gives you a focus.
I go down the tattoo rabbit hole these days. I'm like, oh, where else on my body have I got room for a tattoo? Where's my next one?
You're not planning a new one, are you?
Mate, I've had one without telling you.
You haven't?
Had a little sly one, yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, on the back of my arm.
Oh. Why did you not tell me?
Well, I didn't not tell you on purpose. God, I wasn't expecting this inquisition. I just forgot. It was like a... I forgot, all right? But can you do me a favour, Laura? Right. If I suggest it to you, I'll be secretive about it now anyway because you scared me, but I don't need any more at the moment. So if I start mentioning it, can you just remind me that I've said that I don't need any more right now?
Mate, you can do whatever you like. If you start having tattoos on your face, I might say, come really, Bex, are you sure about this? But otherwise, go for it. I mean, I'm too scared to get tattoos, so I'm living my life through you.
Okay, vicariously. I like that. But I just think I'm going to make a shit decision right now. So just stop me right now. Leave me. Let me go another couple of months.
Okay. Well, Elaine, it's been lovely chatting to you. And I hope you have the holiday of a lifetime. And that when you set off down this treacherous road of trying to conceive again, that, you know, it's a smooth one for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me today. I really do hope it helps someone if they find themselves in the same situation.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much. Yeah.
You know where we are if you need us. We're just hanging out in our DMs and stuff all the time. So, yeah, message anytime.
I will do. Thank you so much.
All right. Lovely.
All right. Take care.
It's been a pleasure. Keep in touch. Let us know how you get on.